is Publishing Talks, a podcast about the publishing industry. Today I'm talking to Owen Purcell in Ireland, who's the founder of Green Lamp Media. This is David Wilk, your host, and welcome, Ian.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's very difficult for me to pronounce your name correctly. I apologize.
It's quite all right. I think there's just too many vowels there for a lot of people who don't pronounce it regularly. So
right,
you're more than forgiven.
We read it as you know, Americans read it sort of literally, so it looks like Ian instead of Owen. Anyway, it's really good to have you on the phone.
Good to be here.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about, just as the background, before we start talking about ideas and some of the issues that are at hand, just a little bit about your background and history in the publishing business and what you're doing now.
Okay, well, I haven't been in the publishing industry too long. I finished a master's in early modern history in 2004 and contemplated doing a PhD in history and decided it wasn't quite for me. And looked around for opportunities, and I was really excited about books and about publishing as an industry, and decided to make a move into that. And I was fortunate enough, because the Irish industry is very small, to get a great opportunity with a newly started publisher in Ireland called Nonsuch. Basically, they hired three graduates to set up a new imprint and to get the show on the road in Ireland, and I was one of those three. And we went from no books in the first year to 18 books in the second year and 36 books by the time I left. So it was a pretty rapid learning curve.
and just curious, what subjects were you publishing?
It was local history, so it was quite a nice way for me to move. It was almost like I was moving sideways in a way, because I was dealing with similar material to that I'd been dealing with in my academic life, which was nice. But it was also a really practical way to learn about the industry, everything from distribution to editing to design and all the problems that you can encounter. And then in 2007, I moved to Mercia Press in Cork, who would be probably, maybe not quite the largest, but certainly one of the largest independent publishers in Ireland. They certainly have a long tradition and a very interesting history. And that was a very enjoyable period for about 2.5 years, but unfortunately moved by the recession. I didn't stay there. But I have founded my own company, Green Lamp Media, which is designed to help publishers and authors adapt to the digital world, and will also, beginning later this year, publish a small list of Irish history digitally first, and in 2011 we'll be pursuing a print list as well, but a rather small one. Digital will probably be the primary focus of the list. So.
Well, and clearly for anyone starting up a publishing business today, or authors publishing themselves, which we'll certainly talk about, digital publishing as a strategy is much less expensive and easier to do startups with.
It is definitely. I think, though, one of the things that I'm conscious of is that the Irish market is actually quite a protected market, and has been not as exposed to digital change as, say, even the UK, or certainly not as much as the US. And Irish readers are still quite keen on print, and I think one of the statistics that came out over the last 2 or 3 weeks was that Penguin Ireland, which would be the Irish imprint of Penguin, sold only 100 e-books in 2009, which is a pretty scary figure. Now that has since increased. In the start of this year, they've already sold over 1,000, but it's still quite low figures. So nobody seems to be able to sell ebooks in Ireland yet.
Maybe a more conservative market.
Yes, I think so.
Well, what's interesting, though, actually, what got me to want to talk to you so much was this wonderful article you wrote for Publishing Perspectives, which has a great title: "Ebooks Are a Cul-de-Sac: Why Publishing Needs to Rethink Its Digital Strategy." And I thought, that's something that we should definitely talk about.
Yeah.
That it doesn't necessarily relate to Ireland at all, but really to the idea that you propose that publishers, what you're suggesting, I think, is that publishers may be becoming distracted by the physical form of distribution, in this case, the e-book as a kind of perhaps coming thing, or it's, you know, the latest and greatest. And what you're proposing, instead of becoming focused on the form, thinking more about what are the values that publishers provide.
Definitely. I think the problem with the ebook is that it is leading publishers into, it's an attractive concept for publishers, an ebook, that it's a good that can be sold as a single product, something that can be bought by a consumer. It seems to reflect the physical market as it exists, and so I think it's attracted a lot of attention, especially with the increasing sales with the advent of Kindle and a few of those other devices that seem to be suggesting that there is a large market for digital books. But I think one of the things I'm really keen to get across to publishers is that in a digital world, it's not just about a downloadable product, that they really need to be pursuing strategies that make the content that they have available accessible to readers across as many possible platforms as possible. Too many possibles there, but what I'm trying to say is that content needs to be agile, that it needs to be accessible on your mobile, on the web, on a PC, whatever way it's accessible, it's possible for a reader to read. Publishers should be pursuing accessibility of their content.
Right, and what you're really saying, I think, and of course I'm putting words in your mouth, but the next leap there is that what you're talking about is that publishers need to engage with readers.
Definitely.
And that is readers wherever they are, readers as actual consumers, which is different from readers as an imaginary aggregated mass. Because the internet and web marketing enables you to engage in a reader almost one-to-one.
Yes, and you really need to, publishers really need to start reaching out and finding out what readers want on an individual level. And yes, obviously there's going to be some degree of aggregation of those wants, but I think they're more easily accomplished or more successfully accomplished along niche lines or community lines than along the lines of publisher to retailer to reader as they currently exist. And I think ebooks, as it's currently set up, as I think I say in the article, really only benefit the device sellers right now, well and truly. The markets are set up along lines that in the long term are not beneficial to publishers. They don't generate new reader relationships for publishers. In fact, in a lot of cases, there's no relationship with the reader and the publisher. I'm just noticing the Apple iBook store setup is that there's going to be six aggregators of choice that Apple has, that if you're not among the chosen few publishers who get direct access to the iBook store, you have to go through one of these aggregators, which means a publisher who publishes ebooks through an aggregator has very little chance of building any kind of a lasting relationship with a reader and has no hope of developing any kind of a concept of what they want, what they may want in the future, what it is they value in the content that they're buying, and why they're willing to part with their hard-earned dollar to pay for it, which is something that publishing has, I think, traditionally lacked, and we really need to address if we're going to change the position of the publishing industry vis-a-vis the other players, especially the tech companies who are, encroaching quite rapidly on that relationship between publishers and readers.
Well, in a lot of ways, what you've described is that the e-reading marketplace literally mimics the print reading marketplace in the sense that it's a linear relationship between a supply chain of publisher to, let's say, distributor or wholesaler to retailer to consumer. And it, in no way will the retailer relinquish the relationship with the consumer to benefit the publisher.
Definitely. And the added disadvantage is that in the digital world, most of those end, the retail element of it, so the end retail element, do not necessarily need the publisher. And we're seeing that more and more. Amazon doing, exclusive deals with authors for their e-rights. Authors themselves deciding that they don't need the intermediary step between them and Amazon or Apple, as the case may be. I mean, if everybody who's not in the top, say, 10 or 15 publishers has to go through an aggregator, why would an author give whatever percentage they have to give to a publisher if they can sell their e-rights directly through that aggregator?
Well, then that does raise another question, and that is, I think in your position, a supposition that publishers should protect their role, let's say. And the role is, as you put it, curation and, one of the things that publishers do besides curation are finance and distribution and editorial quality, design, all of the traditional elements that go into producing print books. Most of those still go into producing an e or digital form. Maybe design is less important and maybe distribution is not as significant because the individual author it can more readily distribute their books, as you're saying. So I guess the question then is, what is the given that a publisher should continue to exist the way publishing has existed in the past? So I'm not arguing that publishers should disappear overnight, but just as a kind of philosophical or business question, if you are an author looking at this, at what you've described, instead of saying, well, publishers should take steps to preserve their role, that author might say, well, maybe an author should take steps to change the relationship between the author and the publisher, and what's to prevent that from happening?
There's nothing to prevent. There's a couple of things going on. First is that I don't think there's going to be when all this settles down, which I think, we're going through a pretty rapid period of change now. It's been threatening for a long time, but I think it's finally starting to come unglued, the linear model. And I think we're going to see a period of innovation, a period of rapid change, a period where authors do take advantage for themselves or think that by going it alone they have a better opportunity. I think we're going to see agents taking a bigger role in the process, and I think we're going to see publishers change very unwillingly because they're going to have to. But as I mentioned in the article, one of the things that I think publishers have to their advantage is an ability to curate content and to gather content in sensible blocks. They've been doing it for a long time. What is an imprint except a block of content built around a guiding principle. That's the best imprints. Some imprints obviously fail in that. They don't quite do that. But I mean, if you think of some of the best imprints that exist, I mean, I'm thinking the one that really comes to mind and the one that's doing all the things that I can think for a publisher to do to identify themselves as somewhere or someone or something that's worth paying attention to is Tor.com and the Tor imprint. So they have a niche market that's, science fiction and fantasy, that has a very dedicated readership, but they also have some very high-profile authors, and yet they're successfully engaging those high-profile authors in a process of community building, which is in turn engaging readers. And I would hope over time, it may take a long time before this really begins to bear fruit, but will hopefully drive sales and identification of Tor as somebody who provides quality content that a reader is willing to pay attention to and hopefully, pay not just attention but money to read the books that they produce because they have the best authors and they have the best discussion. And I think what you see there is the value of curation, the value of you know, trying to build and maintain that author relationship. And the author is beginning to see that actually a publisher does have value to them, and that it isn't necessarily just because you can go on your own doesn't mean that you should, and that there is actually value in the publisher's continued existence. But I do think, and this is the key, that the publisher does have to think long term about where they're going, how they're going to get there, and who their key partners are in order to reach those goals. You know, survival isn't guaranteed, and that's something I think most publishers probably haven't taken on board, that actually they are not guaranteed a place in you know, the publishing industry that comes out of this period of intense change.
Right, and I think you've written about that in one of your blog pieces, that publishers aren't really able, or maybe have not been doing a kind of they've been more reacting than planning.
Definitely.
And I think to be fair, I think that it's difficult, as some publishers have really pointed out, that you are maintaining ultimately two business models at the same time. One is all of the old things that you have to continue to do, because print is still the predominant form. And if you, let's say, 90 or 95 or more percent of your revenue comes from print, you can't neglect your regular business. But at the same time, you have to look ahead to this new business. And of course, it is in many ways different from the old business, in other ways similar. And I think some of the technological and, let's say, future thinking requirements that a publisher has are just not on board. They may not have people in their business who know what to do to think about the future.
I think that's definitely a worry. And I mean, I would certainly have sympathy with publishers in this environment coming from you know, that side of the fence, as it were. I wouldn't be lambasting publishers for not having a vision as such. But I would say that while I'm not lambasting them, I do think that the excuse that, you know, we have to maintain the old part of the business, or the old part of the business requires more of our attention, and we don't have the luxury of doing this. Well, I think that's kind of, you know, at this point, it's become very clear that change is happening. Change has happened, and most publishers, even in Ireland, will have seen, you know, which, as I said before, is pretty insulated from this change. They see it happening. You know, they can't ignore it any longer. And you can say, yes, we don't have the tools, we're not sure what the change is going to be, we're not sure where it'll end up. But I don't think anybody knows exactly where it's going to end up. And one thing I'm fairly certain of is that there will be no new normal model at the end of all this. There's not going to be one playbook that everybody follows. It's going to work out differently for different parts of the industry. I mean, we've already seen that, say, you know, STM publishers and educational publishers are considerably further down this road and are more active participants in digitization and the digital world than trade publishers. And, you know, there's various reasons for that, mainly because the educational and STM publishers are reasonably confident that their consumers will actually pay for digitized content and see value in it, whereas that hasn't always been the case in trade publishing.
Right. But there's a difference, I think, there, and I think this is interesting to think about for trade publishing, that the cost structures are different, so the value of the information is actually higher.
Yes, definitely.
You can charge more for it in digital form, untethered to the print, and it becomes profitable. It is similarly with, you know, when you think about digital short-run printing, which you probably will do when you're thinking about your next level of publishing, you know, for the list of history books you do. It's difficult to do digital printing for low-price trade books.
Yes.
And that's this sort of conundrum is, you know, it's kind of revealed in some of the things you've written about as well, that if publishers need to engage in a community, what does a publisher do who doesn't really have a focused small community like a Tor or some of the, you know, the craft publishers or science publishers or people who are working a very defined territory, even local history is a very defined territory that makes sense. But what do you do if your audience is not so clearly delineable?
Well, I think there are two approaches. The first would be that you get niche, so you actually change your list to reflect the fact that you know a broad list really isn't sustainable anymore. And the beauty of a niche list is that it you know each book reinforces the next. That if you're publishing in the same space, towards the same consumers, with the same you know profile and type, they may not actually be exactly the same reader, but you know where to reach them, who to reach them through, you know those kind of cost benefits of constantly building on what you've already built. Whether that's in print or digital, begin to show over time, and they're very useful. The other approach, I think, is to come up with a really compelling offer that does combine all of what you're doing. I mean, for instance, it's difficult for a literary press to kind of build a niche, as it were, around quite varied writing. But you can build a community around literature itself, around classic books. I mean, I think partly when we say build a community, there's a degree to which that's branding and marketing. And that sounds a little unpleasant in a way because, you know, you don't want to, you know, make it a kind of a cynical thing. I think, you know, the underlying premise is that if you're coming from a genuine place, a community is going to work. But if it's coming from a simply marketing-driven approach, then it probably will, you know, the readers will probably smell a rat and,
well,
and not play along.
You also have to actually add value with it.
Yes, I think
that part is, you know, maybe not said enough from the publishing editorial side. You really have to add to this community and add something that is beneficial to them, which requires knowing who they are and what they want in a way that is, as you point out, it has to be authentic. You have to be real, and that means you have to be part of the community.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I think we will see over time is as, say, one or two or three, you know, in larger niches, there might be two or three communities that coexist. And I think we'll probably see smaller publishers begin to take an active role within, say, larger publishers' communities, if you know what I mean. You know, just, and that will actually add value for the larger publisher. I mean, if there are small publishers who are active commenters, active bloggers, active, you know, participants in your community, that enriches your community. And I think as publishers right now, we tend to view competitors as competitors as competitors. But I think that barrier will actually begin to blur a little bit. I mean, obviously, it's going to take a long time until the community is mature enough to actually accommodate rivals as part of that community. But I think it's a very useful way to look at the future. I mean, if you look at what, now this is online access rather than a community, but if you look at the Safari model where, you know, O'Reilly and Pearson are collaborating rather than competing directly in terms of online access, that's a very attractive model. And it's a model that I think could form the basis of a lot of communities going forward, where rather than directly competing for attention, publishers would collaborate for certain, you know, obviously not in an antitrust kind of fashion, but in a legal fashion where they give access to consumers to more deeper catalogs than they would be able to do on their own. I mean, I think that has potential. The unspoken thing here is, of course, and it is a slightly touchy subject, but I do think, first of all, that in its current form and size, I don't think the publishing industry is going to persist. That the reality of the situation is, given the changing economics, trade publishing is going to be a smaller enterprise, you know, within the next decade, considerably smaller. And that may just be because the staff that worked for large publishers or medium-sized publishers end up operating smaller operations of their own because their skills will still be needed. Just I don't think the finances will necessarily be there in the larger organizations to keep them employed. As the as the revenues shift towards different players and potentially don't necessarily accrue to the publishers themselves.
I tend to think you're right when you describe it in that way. It does appear that a shift will occur. I think the sense that there's value will be found in different places in the supply chain, mm-hmm. and different players will emerge who will be able to provide value in perhaps a lower cost environment, who can disrupt some of the existing players, and that could occur in lots of different ways. And of course, the part that some observers point out is that, you know, it's a complex situation where there will be moves and counter moves, and then kind of disruptive moves, and then reactive moves. All kinds of things will happen. And as you indicated before, some entities will perform different roles, or it may be expanded, may be reduced. But I think that it's clearly fraught for anybody who's involved. It requires paying attention to lots of different factors and trying to be nimble and see the future coming before it whacks you upside the head.
I think that is definitely the truth.
Well, listen, it's been great talking to you, and I hope we get another chance to do this. Owen Purcell, the founder and operator of Greenlamp Media, and perhaps one of the up-and-coming people who will change this environment that we're all a part of. Thanks so much for talking to me.
Thank you very much. It's good to talk to you, too.